Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, trees and non-binaries, and welcome to another episode of Fantastic Plays, the show here on the Fantastic Universes Podcast Network, where I, Adam Ray, and a very special guest talk about our favourite things in the world of gaming, be they PC, console, tabletop, or anything in between. Those of you listening to us through our Patreon support want to give you a big thank you to all of that love and generosity. As you well know, you get unedited and uninterrupted versions of this show and all the other podcasts we produce, including, I suppose this would be an apropos time to announce, the second show coming to the network would be Detective Comics. My father, Steve Ray, and his good pal James Attias from Comics in Motion will be talking about all the things that strike their fancy about Batman, and you can check out Little Old Me on episode 3, putting them a moral quandary. But, that's something for you to look forward to, and you can listen to right now if you are subscribed to our Patreon, so do check that out, dear listeners. But back to the world of gaming. We are going to be diving into a new foray here onto the podcast with a very familiar friend, my good pal and teammate, Connor McIndowell, a.k.a. Okoryu. He's going to bring to us, and this show, something that is a style of tabletop gaming that is entirely new to me, and a style of tabletop gaming that is entirely new to the Fantastic Plays podcast. So, Connor, my good pal, tell us about the joys of tactical minis in this particular game of yours.
Yeah, hello, everybody. Today we're going to be talking about tabletop games. In this regard, it would be a skirmish game, but I feel like it would be best to talk a bit about tabletop gaming in general. And the easiest one to bring up for this is Warhammer.
Yeah.
Warhammer 40,000, Fantasy, Age of Sigmar, the granddaddy other than just general miniature soldiers, in which you and your opponent will dictate your armies across the battlefield, making tactical decisions for them and using their abilities to either score victory points through various objectives or just slaughtering the enemy and their forces. Generally both for most games. It's a type of genre that I've had near and dear to my heart since I was around 10 years old. So I've been doing it on and off for about 15 years. I started playing it back in Warhammer back in 5th edition, and that sparked a lifelong interest in tabletop miniatures, both because the models are beautiful, lore is generally titanic across the board, and just a general fun going with friends. Today we're not going to be talking about Warhammer because we want to start a bit smaller. We're going to be talking about a skirmish game, which is, instead of taking grand armies, you are instead focused on a small band of merry men, critters, creatures, and everything in between. And you generally have a force of like 4 to maybe 8 beings on your side as you wage a battle across a smaller battlefield, and typically less playtime as well, making it much more accessible for the average person, rather than have to worry about how do I get to X point value and buying boxes upon boxes of military troops. And today, our forefront for this game shall be Malifaux.
Yes, you've been trying to pique my interest in this game for a good couple of weeks now in our off-the-air chatter, and I'll admit you have sort of piqued my interest in it because this would be my first foray into tactical minis games as it is. I think that would be the genre for it because I've seen Warhammer played ad infinitum across various game stores across London, and back when it was a bigger deal, I saw Star Wars X-Wing played to a quite a large degree, but I never partook of the genre because I was too deep in my TCGs to invest in two fairly pricey gaming hobbies, let alone just one. So as a foray into it, based on some of the products you've shown me, it looks like you get the main sort of heroes, the main characters, and then the rest of their crew around them in like one easy pack, and then you can sort of like get supplemental stuff around it, as far as I can understand. So why don't you introduce Malifaux to this uninitiated grasshopper that is me?
Well, I believe when I went, I've got a miniatures game for you. And you said, okay, try me. And I said, okay, can I interest in you a game that is gothic, steampunk, Lovecraftian, noir, and everything in between those? And you just went, yeah, that sounds awesome. And that's kind of what Malifaux is. It's a hodgepodge of these kinds of different genres, putting together into a beautiful lore craft. The amount of story gone into the game and all the different masters as they are known and the different characters has really just expanded this world, which is all basically set around a city, because that is what Malifaux is a city, which is a twisted mirror of an alternate Earth within the 1900s.
You were able to get my interest pretty quick from the themes, and there's a lot of story that could be done around it already, which is already a big sell for me.
Very much so, and they still add to it, and throughout each edition, they kind of move forward the needle point of time, which can be seen in certain characters of how they get older, or they get more powerful or weaker, and they change their allegiances. But how the product typically works within this game is you get a basic crew box, which includes a master, as well as their totem, which is a special thing that you typically take with the associated master. So, for example, Lord Chompy Bits is the totem of the Dreamer, and you would take him with the Dreamer as he blends well with his strategy, and it's very instrumental to it. And then you would generally get like a few minions as well as an enforcer to go with it, starting you off within your keyword. You would then, there will then be some supplemental sets where they introduce new models or additional masters or alternative masters for your keyword, and you pick those up to be able to expand your keyword or your entire faction, as you are able to access the versatiles within your faction on top of your own keyword.
Okay, so you've all got, so there's enough of a strong starting crew for whichever main character you want to play with, but as long as things match sort of the keyword and the playstyle and the faction, there's enough to sort of build around and build into.
Yeah, very much so, and you're not actually just limited to one master in a game. You can actually do what's called dual mastering currently, which is kind of quite a meta thing to do, where you take two different masters so you get access to two different keywords and expand it. However, for today, we'll just be talking about a single mastered crew as an introductory. So, for example, myself and Adam were talking through several of the factions, and you may say you want to play Resurrectionists, the necromancers of Malifaux, trying to regain the dead and twisted flesh of the world, constantly tinkering with everyone around you. So you may end up with a keyword like experimental with Dr. McMorning, as he applies upgrades to his crew.
Definitely reads like a sinister Dr. Frankenstein style of character, almost sort of like the Stitches from the lore behind Innistrad, where people are creating their own unholy forms of zombies akin to Frankenstein's monster. Yeah, that was one of the masters you had recommended to me, and certainly looks pretty cool. So talk a little bit about like what sort of ties them sort of gameplay wise and themes between each of the factions.
So typically how we play the game is not using dice. Instead, we use what's known as a fate deck. You can use a typical deck of cards for this, and you just apply each of the suits to a specific symbol. But you would try to get one of the fate decks so it's an easier time. You don't have to worry about lining up each of the symbols. Each of the different factions play uniquely amongst themselves, each trying to focus on something different, but each master does fulfill certain roles, similar to like a deck from a TCG. Mm-hmm. There's control types of masters, aggro. There are ones that are all about trying to run schemes, one trying to constantly apply debuffs or taking them away to deal damage. There's basically a type of gameplay for anyone within at least one of the masters, but they generally have a running theme when you go through a specific faction.
Strong start. It's good to be able to cater to lots of different play styles and lots of different styles of play. So there's, I think you showed me like 7 or 8 factions or different play styles, but some of them have different congruent buffs and similarities to others. So that's, again, good player outreach, good player engagement.
Yes, very much so. For example, we can even just go for two different ones within the same faction. So we have McMorning, the one that I showed you, who's all about summoning amalgams and experimenting on his own units to give them additional upgrades that increases their abilities, and poisoning himself in his own units to heal from that poison while slowly damaging his opponents. He's very focused on the upgrades part as well, especially as he goes to Big Morning 2, as it's known, which is the alternative master of him. But there is another master within Resurrectionist that also quite focused on upgrades, which is Yan Lo, who is all about retainers and ancestors, as his keyword dictates, where his more powerful units are known as retainers, as ancestors. And as they die, they apply an upgrade to one of the retainers, which then allows you to kill the retainer to bring back the ancestor, allowing you to cycle through your more powerful units as he himself starts getting upgrades as the game goes along.
Oh, that is interesting. So you get sort of a gameplay loop where certain things don't die. I think that sort of makes sense within the Resurrectionists. They're persistent and don't necessarily stay dead, so that makes a lot of thematic sense. But it's good to see that there are two different applications for the upgrade keyword.
Yep, and in regards to a summoner, like Yano can be, there's then Reva Cortinas, who's the Revenant keyword. She tries to summon lots of zombies while also setting off great big fires and burning everything around her.
It's always a fun way to spice up a battlefield.
Very much so, and so she summons zombies to push her objectives, and then summons bonfire markers and bonfire pyre zombies, lanterns I believe they're called, which then apply burning to those around them as they then explode. And that's how she acts as a summoning master who slowly expands her influence across the battlefield.
Yep, that's definitely a way to sort of spread out and make the actual field of play a lot more hazardous to the opponent, depending on how the buffs and the areas of effect have sort of applied to. It's definitely going on a strong start for like lots of different gameplay options and possibilities here. So it's again, I know very little about this genre, but it's got a lot of stuff going on for it.
Yes, yeah, so that was more very much to show that those were three different masters from the same faction, and yet they all play completely differently. But then there's certain tie-ins that make them all fit in with each other.
Yeah, so again, with the Resurrectionists, they care about like things not sticking to the grave and being able to res certain powerful effects.
Yep, as well as slowly whittling away your opponent.
Yeah, so how do some of the other factions play?
Well, we have the Guild, who are basically the authoritarian leaders of Malifaux. They are the ones that are pushing your taxes, setting up the militia, the general company running everything. They are the ones that protect the citizens and fight against the monsters as the true heroes that they are.
The goody two-shoes. They think they are. They're probably not for real.
No, very much not. They're the ones that are also kind of cracking down on everyone and making sure that everyone's keeping a toe in line, and if they step one out of it, then that's just not okay.
Definitely not. But they think that they're the authoritarian good, but they're definitely not.
Very much no. And they have they're generally quite aggressive. They're very human in their appearances for their models, other than Charles Hoffman's, who's all about making a mech suit around all of his own units, which is quite funny.
Oh, that is interesting.
He's got the augmented upgrades keyword.
The joys of upgrades.
Upgrades people. But within the same faction, we also have Nelly Cochrane, who's a journalist.
Interesting. Not something you'd ever expect in a battlefield like that.
No, but she's amazing at running objectives. She's great at getting the scoop by sending her units around the battlefield, finding the correct position to be able to score extra schemes and extra points that way.
Okay. So, yeah, being able to maneuver and be a bit more sneaky. That's a good versatility in what would seem to be like a vanilla class from the flavor reasons.
And then her secondary master is that she reads a very scary book and becomes insane.
That's the weird Cthulhu sort of like Lovecraftian weird steampunk setting I was expecting from. Yep, that's what happens to all kinds of characters that want to try and stay smart in a setting like that. They delve too greedily and too deep into forbidden knowledge.
Yep, she becomes a member of the cult of the Burning Man, a major cult within Malifaux, trying to bring forth one of the great disasters known to the area.
Yep, a cult so big that they just have raves in the desert.
Pretty much, yeah. That is how it goes. they're very interesting. They also have Lady Justice, who is... I heard you like going forward and smashing everything in your way, and she will just kill everything in her way.
Again, just like we appreciate one who wakes up and chooses violence. But then again, I think that's also pretty true to like the barbarian style, bombastic, high combat sort of gung-ho approach.
Very much so. Another faction would be one of my personal favorites, which is the Neverborn.
Uh-huh.
As you can imagine, we are what said. We did say that Lovecraftian horror was a part of this game, and the Neverborn very much are the entities that remained within Malifaux before the humans arrived. Okay. They were the native inhabitants. And the scary stories told to children to keep them from misbehaving. And they're not very happy that humans are here.
Well, kill all humans has been a mantra for all big scary monsters from across history and across fiction. So more power to them.
Yes. They also are one of the factions that has the most crossovers with the other factions, because you can be a Neverborn and someone else, typically. So they have a lot of sway with others because they aren't just natural inhabitants of Malifaux, such as Zoraida, who is part of the Bayou faction, but also part of the Neverborn faction, because she is a natural inhabitant of Malifaux, but she is also one of the gremlins.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. We also have Marcus, who... kind of has aligned himself with another faction known as the Arcanists, because he wants to propel magic forward. But then he focuses on mutating himself and his followers, which are Chimera, to push them forward further into evolution.
Well, they are ambitious with those changes to their own biology, I guess. We've had a good look at sort of the lore, and like you were saying before we jumped on the call to record the show, the lore has gone very deep. So we talked a bit about the gameplay and that it's not done by dice. It's done by matching up certain cards sort of within the actual like fate deck that you start with. So what are the actual gameplay loops? How does a general skirmish or match go in Malifaux?
Well, each player will first set up their... decide how the game is going to play. They'll find out where they put the objective markers and what the objective of victory is. Typically, it's some form of objective point gaining, such as there'll be a objective on your side in the middle and then on your opponent's side, and whoever controls more at the end of the turn gets victory points, which at the end of a certain turn, whoever has more wins.
Right.
This means that even if you technically destroy all your opponent's units, they could still win, because they have more points than you if you haven't focused on it.
That's interesting, actually. It's a good way to keep it balanced, because I know that like a lot of other tactical minigames like this, where if like with a few good rolls or a few good flips from the fate deck, you could just like slaughter your opponent's team and then they just have no chance. So that's a good balancing thing.
There's a way to kind of mitigate that in this game, which I love, and it's one of my favorite mechanics.
Oh, yeah?
But we should, that's a bit of foreshadowing for now.
Fair enough.
How the gameplay loop works is that each player will have all their models on the table and then they'll take turns activating. So they pick any unit in their play and they say, I activate this. That then gets two actions, which they'll conduct. And then the next player will pick their model to activate. And then you take it in turns to keep going until all models are activated. And that is the turn.
Okay. So so you can activate each character, each model once per round?
Technically, yes. However, that's where abilities and masters come into play. There's a powerful ability known as Obey, which allows you to force an activation.
Okay. So even so, one that hasn't activated yet or one that's already been activated, you can go again with it.
Pretty much, yes. It can go again.
Yeah. Borrowing another term from another card game because that's just how gamers talk.
Pretty much.
Yeah, but it's good to sort of keep all of the tactical options there and to make each unit on the board matter and relevant throughout every stage of the game. But then again, I suppose that's also, again, very indicative of Flesh and Blood. You start at your strongest with all your armor, maximum health, full hand of cards, and then you eventually wear down your opponent as the game goes on, which is true here because after a while, certain units will die, certain units will have debuffs, so that it becomes more of a struggle depending on how the back and forth goes. But that's not necessarily a downside because certain things will stay balanced, right? Hypothetically?
Hypothetically, yes. That is generally how it works. Unfortunately, there are some masters that just do not play well into others. Mm-hmm. There can be matchups where it's either incredibly difficult to play through, or I have heard about some matchups that are just unplayable and incredibly lopsided in how they work. But that's more due to how certain masters play.
Okay. Well, hopefully, even in like unfavorable matchups, there should be still some amount of play there, because I think the best way I heard it described was a loading ready run sketch about Magic, is that some matchups, some decks are naturally just bad against others. Like sometimes the game will be a game of chess, and sometimes will be you hucking pebbles at tanks. So, and in most games I've played, which are like combative and dueling, like there are some matchups that are just like horrendous and you feel bad to do it every time. I think no matter how many card games I play, one game I will always hate to play is the mirror match, where you're playing against something that's very similar. So
very much the same.
So I hope that even when the like quote unquote bad matchups, I hope there's still some level of play there, or is it literally just a slaughter?
I can imagine when this is being said, it's more a case of when you get to higher levels of play.
Right.
When both players have the full range of their crew, know their crews perfectly, and then there is very little in the case of unoptimized play. I can imagine that's where this case of, it's close to unwinnable, but then you'll have other matchups which feel the same for you.
Right.
Where you just walk in and go, well, mm-hmm, I'm going to do my thing, and because I do my thing, you're going to have a bad time.
Yep, you just look at your lineup, you look at their lineup, and it's like, I can eat you guys, that's fine.
And I think that's why the dual master meta has occurred, where you take another master to fix your lopsided matchups.
Yeah, I think that makes
it a bit more interesting to play. Yeah, and that's when you start playing at, so there's a, I forgot about that. The soul stones, which is our point values for this game.
Yeah, so you were talking a little bit about, like, during game setup, and talking about the various different win conditions. So what are the various win conditions about gaining points? Is it, like, first to X a certain number of rounds? Is there sort of versions like where it's, like, team deathmatch, where you just want to wipe out their squad? And is there stuff like catch the flag? Or, like, what are the actual game modes?
I believe typically what happens is you have a deck of objective cards. You deal out 5 of them or 6, and then between you and your opponent you select 2 or 3 each.
Right.
This means that you may have some overlapping, but you then have, you pick the objective that will play best for your style. If you're playing a very controlling type of master and crew, there's no point of trying to pick the objective that makes you force you to go all in onto your opponent's side of the field.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, because certain crews and certain deck lineups are just going to be favored to certain different styles of play, so that just makes total sense.
What's the point of asking controlled by winning by turn 3, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You don't need to rush it that badly.
No. And the way that you actually decide your crew, as I feel like, as a bit out of order, but
that's fine, we're talking about it. It's all good.
You make your crew based on soul stones. You have typically 50 to 80 when building your crew. Obviously, if you're just playing crew box versus crew box, you do it that way, or whatever you and your opponent decide. Each of your masters and units will cost a certain amount of soul points, which then take away from this value. All leftover soul stones you actually get during the game, which allow you to do special abilities.
Okay. So they're like a buying cost at the start of the game, but also can be used for resource partway through.
Yeah, so typically you don't want too many left over. If you want like 2 to 5, maybe, right, depending on what crew you're playing. But you can then use these to like replace a card you flip for a damage, or to do extra pluses or extra minuses from your opponent, or reduce damage.
Okay, this is a good way to mitigate things, but keeping them relevant throughout all stages of the game, it's well handled.
Yes, it's a very interesting system, especially when you look at how combat and ability checks and damage is actually done.
First, there was the DC Comics News podcast. Then came the Spinner Rack. And now, the third show brought to you by the guys that brought you all that other stuff I just mentioned. I Am the Night. A story about the stories. A show celebrating Batman, the animated series. Week by week, episode by episode. Just when you thought it was safe to put on a pair of headphones, I Am the Night.
Why, hello there. I'm Seth Singleton, and I'm here to tell you about Mad Pup, a Harley Quinn cast. 3, 2, 1.
Harley Quinn? Harley fucking Quinn? What have we learned from this crazy show?
Making bat shark repellent relevant since 1966.
Oh, look, Booger.
And we've gone completely off the rails.
I hear the bat signal.
Shut up and battle me, nerds.
I definitely do not fuck bat.
In need of an adult size nemesis.
Humans make good fertilizer.
You can't fuck with Lois Lane.
For fuck's sake.
I'm a damn good cop.
Lot of lasers.
Educational and informative. The DC Comics News Podcast Network presents Mad Love, the Harley Quinn cast. Back to you, Seth.
So, tell us your thoughts. We'd love to hear from everyone out there. Or not. That's really up to all of you. Fuckers.
Picture this, someone who knows nothing about comics.
Someone who knows comics from movies, TV, and video games.
A complete ultra comics nerd.
You pick the character you want us to talk about.
You send us the questions you want answered.
You make the show.
A podcast by fans.
For fans.
Making new fans.
Superheroes.
Or dummies.
Part of the Comics in Motion podcast network.
In a world of stereotypes, being called a geek comes with a certain image.
There is still that ingrained thing within me that is a little bit embarrassed about it.
In reality, geek culture has never been more mainstream, and behind every geek is a real story.
My dad was the one who got me into Star Wars and things.
Join me, your super dummy Paul, as I continue my learning experience and talk to the real people.
I'm a secondary school teacher, so I teach 11 to 16-year-olds in English.
Hear their stories exclusively on Fantastic Universes.
He's one of them, like, you've ever going to grow up? And I'm like, no, why should I like my life. I enjoy what I do. This is my hobby.
Available on all your favourite podcast catchers.
Hi, my name's Steve, and I'm here to tell you all about the DC Comics News Podcast. Every week, my friends and I sit down and discuss everything DC. Movies, TV and streaming, comic books, and everything in between. But don't just take my word for it. Here are a couple of our sponsors. Listen to the DC Comics News Podcast. It's audio justice. No. It's audio chaos. These wackos are crazier than I am. Well, maybe you're both right. Whatever the case, you can find the DC Comics News Podcast on every podcast platform. Apple Podcasts. Google Play. Spotify. Stitcher. And everywhere else you find podcasts. So, can I go now? Let him go. He did everything you asked.
Hello, listeners. This is Tony Farina from DC Comics News and an occasional guest on Comics in Motion. I'm pleased to announce a new show called Indie Comics Spotlight. Each week, my guests and I will be taking a deep dive into a current title or a classic graphic novel from a publisher other than the big two. Consider this show the best of the rest. My hope is that we'll bring new readers to independent comics and give old readers a chance to share their thoughts. Join me each week in the Comics in Motion feed in your favorite podcast catcher.
Okay, so talk to us a little bit about that. How are those checks and damage results calculated and such?
And that's where we get to the cards.
Yeah.
Back to our bread and butter.
Oh, we've come full circle.
At the beginning of the game, you're going to shuffle up your deck and you're going to draw a set amount of cards. I apologize, I haven't played in a while. I've been just trying to get people interested to go out, buy my own crews, and then play. I believe it's 5 cards you start with, 2 to 5 cards.
Okay.
You will then, whenever you do a check or you do damage, you will flip over the top card of your deck and you will check the number on that card. It's between 1 and 13. 1 to 6 is low, 7 to 9 is medium, and 10 to 13 is high,
right?
Which applies to damage. So it most times damage will have three brackets, so it'll be like 1, 3, and 5.
Right.
When you do damage, you get a low, you'll do 1 damage. If you get a medium, you get 3. If you do a high, you get 5 damage. And the way we do these checks is by flipping a card beforehand and checking the number on that card compared to their toughness or compared to the check that you're doing. It will say what difficulty value that it is, and you will then add your stat in that test plus the cards.
Okay, so you are still, with the modifiers and such, you're not punished for rolling low. So you still get some damage in here or there.
It's a bit like D&D when you do a skill check. You roll a dice and you hope that your result equals or betters it.
Yeah.
And the better your result, the better your result will be.
Yeah.
However, remember those cards in your hand I told you about?
Oh, yeah, that's a relevant point, yeah.
Yeah, it is, because you get to cheat.
Love that.
We get a thing in this game called Cheat Fate, because sometimes the main character has to have plot armor.
Yep, that's true for every fantasy story I've read.
Yep, sometimes you got to be the hero. And we use this card in our hands to replace the cards that we would flip.
Okay, so you can be like, that's not going to be work for me. I have this high one that's in my hand, and now the damage is actually going to knock out your guy.
Yep, and at the start of your turn, you discard as many cards as you wish and then redraw them. Uh-huh. And then there's certain masters that like to manipulate either the top card of your deck, your discard pile, and like to draw additional cards or force your opponent to discard cards. Those are the ones that quite interest me, to be honest.
Yeah, I wonder why. Well, I mean, I imagine, because you've been selling me quite hard on Resurrectionist, I imagine they care a lot about the discard as well as the dead units on board.
I think it depends. They're much. I feel Resurrectionists are a lot less. I'm going to try and... actually, Molly might be about that, to be honest. I haven't read Molly yet. She's interesting.
Okay.
I think a couple of theirs might be more interested in that, but they're very much more about their activations management rather than their card management. They do have some card draw, and they have some very powerful units. They are considered one of the best factions in the game because their C-tier master, if you were to look at competitive tierings and all this sort of thing, from some of the videos I've been watching, their C-tier master is the equivalent of a B or an A-tier for most other factions.
Wow, their worst is like better than some factions' bests.
Yes, they are that powerful. Like, Jack Dorr is a outcast resurrectionist. In resurrectionist, I believe he's either B tier or C tier, including his secondary master. I think his secondary master, the secondary version of him, Jack Dorton Sold, is worse. But in outcast, he's like a nater.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. that's how kind of ridiculous Resurrection is, because they just have, for example, with Reva, she summons five zombies and then you have double the amount of activations during your turn than your opponent.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense to be able to like make it work on like swarm style so that you're not too punished for having a bunch of dudes and then not being able to do anything with them.
Very much so, but also if you get five activations where they don't really matter too much before your important pieces start activating, you can see everything that your opponent's doing during their turn and then react to it all.
Oh, okay. So,
or you can pick when you want your important pieces to activate.
So the actual turn structure, is it like I activate a guy, you activate a guy, I activate a guy, you activate a guy? Or is it like, all right, it's my turn, I'm going to activate my guys in this order, this order, this order, this order?
No, it's I activate, you activate, I activate, you activate.
Okay.
So summoners are quite powerful for that.
Yeah, because like after a while, they'll have activated all of their guys. They might be able to do some stuff with their cards or with some of those soul stones to be able to like do other stuff, but you'll have double the number of the guys that they have to be able to like keep going.
Yep, pretty much. So typically it's after like the first couple of turns because they've got to build up their extras. Mm-hmm. But if I, say, have three main powerful units and then four zombies and you've just got a squad of five, I can work through all four of my zombies, saving my three powerful guys, and you've already done four of your five activations.
Yeah, that seems good. You're sort of time walking them because like their effects are like more impactful, but they have to do it eventually. But then you're setting on your powerful guys eventually after. That sounds pretty strong.
Keep that is. However, they could also just go, I just want to get rid of one of your powerful things. And if you keep waiting because you think there's going to be a better opportunity to activate, say, Reva, they could just nuke Reva, she dies, and then you lose that activation.
Okay, so there is still some play there. That makes sense.
Oh, very much so. There's a lot of strategic play within Malifaux because you have to constantly work out what order you want to activate in, which is best per turn, which is going to get the most value, what happens if they just decide to kill X unit that hasn't activated yet, or try and kill whatever unit hasn't activated yet.
Okay. Well, that actually makes a lot of sense. So is there like a mechanic like with initiative in the Star Wars TCG or with the attack token in Runeterra where once both players have done all of their conceivable game actions, the new round starts, but has first turn decided?
I believe first turn is you flip over the top card of your deck, whoever gets highest wins that.
And is that for like, and does that set an initiative order, or is that at the start of every new round?
And then it swaps to the other person the next turn.
Okay, that makes sense.
There's also, you also do have jokers in your deck, both a red and a black.
Okay.
These are interesting because I believe if you flip over the black joker, you just nullify all the damage and it just ends. But if you flip over the red joker, it has all four of the symbols.
Okay, wow.
Which means that a lot of effects in this game count which symbols you have, or like apply additional effects if you have certain symbols.
Right.
So just having one card with all four can lead to very powerful things.
Yeah. That could be pretty funny if it's timed well, because I can also see it happening at some points in the game where it's like won't be as impactful as it otherwise could be.
Very much so. It's a card. The jokers are very interesting for decks that like to manipulate their cards and like the discard and deck piles. There's even one master that likes to literally just swap them.
Oh, that's funny.
He goes, oh, I like my discard pile, I guess I'll swap. And it stays in the exact order that it's in.
Oh, so you just stacked up some stuff so that you know where the low cards are and the high cards are. Oh, that's so funny.
I believe you're not allowed to rearrange your discard pile.
That's fine. Old school magic rules.
Yeah, old school magic rules or legacy cards rules because of cards like Never Shadow, which care about order placement. So with these masters, you have to constantly worry about what order you're putting your cards into your graveyard, which is really interesting.
Nah, so great. Yeah, that makes sense to sort of keep things balanced and fair, but still there's a lot of play to that if you've been able to stack your discard well enough.
Mm-hmm. And you can just get an insane turn if you just manage to cheat fate or do correct discards.
Yep. Okay, so there's definitely a lot of good high-level strategy here and just lots of different decision points. So how important is terrain and the battlefield compared to other tactical minis games?
Typically, your terrains are probably a bit lighter than most other games.
Okay.
You generally have it so that... You got to remember that Malifaux is in actually quite a small place. And you got to try and remember what kind of battlefield you're going to be in, where your battle's taking place. So if your battle is taking place in Malifaux itself, within the city, you're probably just fighting along a street. So you might have some like houses, maybe a couple of alleyways allowing you to go around them if you really wish. But most of the mid area is going to be completely barren, maybe other than some barricades, which allows you to have some play with avoiding line of sight with, say, lampposts and barricades. But you also have wide open spaces to be able to move your units around. However, on the flip side, if you're fighting in the bayou, which is a massive swamp, you might have a lot of trees. So although it's a bit more sparse and there's very little like hard cover, you have a lot more interesting ways of trying to cut off line of sight.
Okay. I thought it's worth asking because I know that terrain in the battle map is a huge deal in a lot of other games, particularly Warhammer. So, and like certain objects you can interact with in Star Wars. So yeah, that's always a big deal.
Yeah, nowhere near as much terrain as, say, Warhammer. It's even got probably less terrain than Warhammer Kill Team, which is their version of a skirmish game.
Oh, wow.
At least from what I've seen.
Okay.
It does change depending on who's playing. If you're playing at, say, a tournament or with friends, you may do with what you got.
That's totally fair, and it sort of keeps things relatively level and clear, because I know that I have a lot of dry erase tactical boards from all of my D&D play, so that'll be a thing to improvise with when you finally get me Dr. McMorning or one of the other intro sets, so that I can finally try my hand at this nonsense. Very excited for
it. I believe it was like Lin Yi Lai or Dr. McMorning, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, those two are the ones that definitely pique my interest. But do you have any other big grand things you want to inform me and our listeners about before I ask you the big question of who you're excited for and who you're looking to build?
Not currently, no. I know that the good thing about Malifaux is that they're constantly releasing new content. I believe we're about to get a new box for December, which is one of the keywords for Rasputina from Arcanis.
Right.
And there's very cool models in that. But also, I think it's just a game that, from what I've seen, most people have looked into it and either loved or have only dropped out of it because there's just no player base for it in their area, which is really unfortunate, as it's insane how cheap the game is relative to other model games.
When did it first come out? When did it first start having sales?
Malifaux. First edition of Malifaux came out at Gen Con in August 2009.
Oh, wow, this game is way older than anybody thought of. Okay, what teams, what kits are you looking to put together for this game?
Oh, no, don't ask me this. Okay,
which two or three, as opposed to which seven or eight, because I know what you're like.
Yes, so originally, when I started looking at this game, I was dead set on being Neverborn or Resurrectionist as my faction.
Right.
Dead set. I love Necromancers as a class in like D&D and in RPG games. I love the aesthetic of Necromancers summoning minions and stuff and the various types of necromancy out there. Neverborn being Lovecraftian horrors, especially the Dreamer, I really liked the look of. He was really cool. And then for some reason, I just went completely off key and went, you know what? The Outcasts have some really cool stuff.
We'll tell us a little bit about those friends.
So the Outcasts are literally that. They are the people who decided that they do not like the guild. So they decided to seek out existence free of the law.
Outcasts themselves. I love that. Respect it.
Yeah. So they are typically scoundrels, mercenaries, as it says here. Or they're just trying to make their own way through life and existence.
I respect that.
Yeah. So like an example of that would be Tiri, who is the Bygone. She's just trying to find her ancestors and her people's old technologies and bring them back to the present.
Is that the master you're looking to build?
A part of me wants to build Tiri. However, I feel like she's a bit too difficult for me right now as someone just getting into the game. She has some beautiful models. I do have Leviticus, who is one of the most... I have bought his original crew kit. He's about the amalgams. He's all about his entire crew is falling apart.
Oh, no.
Literally, they are entropy incarnate.
Nice.
They're all taking damage every time they do stuff, but then they heal themselves and get benefits off of healing themselves.
Oh, okay. That's clever. I like that.
And then he overheals stuff and then he makes like fleshy minion things and then just stitches them all together to bigger minion things.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I like that there's actually a decent mechanic for overhealing. You can actually do some stuff with that.
There's a few of those actually that do overhealing. I believe one of the Neverborn does it. It might be Castor does that as well. But what Leviticus focuses on is stuff like desolation engines and dust storms fusing together. He also has his secondary one, which is Leviticus Pariah Blood. I plan on picking up because it's based on the Four Horsemen.
Oh, cool. Oh, yeah.
There's a keyword called Horsemen. There are four. There's the Hell Rider, Mechanical Rider, Death Rider, and Red Rider, I want to say. And they're all from different factions, but they all work under the same keyword together. And it's really cool how they interact.
Very cool. Yeah, because you'd imagine the horsemen would want to sort of ride together, as it were.
Yes, very much so. But the one that I'm very much looking at the moment is Tara, who used to be a resurrectionist, funnily enough, as well as an outcast. Yeah, she kind of just trying to get out of time.
Just done with existing in the time stream, just want to exist fourth dimensionally. I respect that. I could believe that.
Pretty much. She's just trying to serve obliteration and just destroy everything. So she is out of time. Her entire keyword is obliterate, where her units are trying to bury themselves, which is a keyword within the game where you remove the model from play and leave a marker there.
Yep.
So that they still exist, but they're like underground or phased out, or imagine not a way of them not being where they should be.
Yep. But they still sort of have like place on the board that can interact with certain stuff under the rules of that faction and that master's keywords.
Very much so, which is what Tara does, because her units just go, nope, I don't want to be here right now, and hop out of time. And then say to your opponent, guess what? You're out of time too. Come out here with me and fight.
Yes, but your units are used to being outside of time and space. Theirs might not be, so they'd probably be horrendously outmatched in a fight like that.
Very much so, especially when an Eldritch Horror is then trying to nibble on them.
Tasty.
So yes, they're servants of the void.
There's definitely lots of different ways to play, so they've definitely got the themes down and they've got the themes to married well into the mechanics so that most kinds of players can find anything to really tickle their fancy here in Malifaux. I love that. It's definitely piqued my interest, you enabler, you. I can't believe you've done this.
What can I say? I didn't even tell you, there was one other crew I wanted to talk about.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
Because I feel like I have to talk about him, because I feel I have to play him.
Yep, go ahead. Well, based on how well I know you, how well you describe this, will be like either, oh, that's interesting, or yep, that's how you like to play games. This makes total sense. Go ahead.
So his name is Jacob Lynch.
Uh-huh.
His keyword is honeypot.
Right.
So imagine Cthulhu and Gambit had a child.
Okay, that's definitely two of your dear loves, sure.
Yeah, so Jacob Lynch is, he runs basically a casino, but he's basically fueling all the gamblers' addictions into something called the Hungering Darkness as through the Deal of Brilliance, which is a distilled and highly addictive essence.
Oh, that's so good. So
he's slowly facilitating that into the Hungering Darkness to make it more powerful. And then eventually he failed a bet, and so the Hungering Darkness takes over.
Oh, that's so good. So like the feelings of like greed and desperation from all those people betting away their life savings in the casino, their all of that negative energy is going to feed their dark master. But when he loses a game, all of that onus is put onto him, so he has to serve this dark being from outside of time and space. Oh, I love that. That's so good.
Pretty much. So it's really interesting because the Hunger and Darkness is his totem.
Right.
So the key unit that he basically always takes. It doesn't, when he take him as the Hunger and Darkness for Jacob Lynch, it loses the totem keyword.
Right.
And you can make it into the masked crew leader.
Oh, so after a while, like he just what gets consumed, so your main unit is the actual entity.
So basically, when you start a game, you would pick a crew leader. Typically, that's your master.
Right.
You do this for certain objectives. But in terms of Jacob Lynch, because he's kind of a figurehead for this thing,
yeah.
He is the guy that interacts with the beings. Kind of think of Station 5 from Doctor Who.
Yes,
was the big Gribbly.
Yeah, I was thinking it would be that. So, like, this dude is like Simon Pegg's character, but the actual big boss is that weird, gross thing in the ceiling, the Jaggerfest. Yeah.
Pretty much. And so his keyword is rigging the deck.
Oh, so it actually has a lot of, like, card manipulation for the fake deck.
Yep, you're all about manipulating the top cards of your deck so you get the perfect draw.
Makes perfect sense for a card shark gambler type.
Yep, and his model is him having a deck of cards infused with magic, like Gambit.
Yep, based on how much I know you like Gambit and Twist of Fate, you have to play this character.
I have to play this character, there was no choice.
Oh man. Yeah, that makes perfect sense for you. I would very much like to see that whilst I'm there with either Lynn from the library or Dr. McMorning just trying to res zombies or bring stories to life.
Play investing more for Dr. Molly. Although if you ever feel like he can always just play Jack the Ripper.
Yeah, he does also looks pretty good, this guy, Seamus. Yeah.
Yeah, he is literally Jack the Ripper.
Which makes me think of Dan Bull's rap from Epic Rap Battles of History.
Yes, it's very good, that song.
Oh, yeah. But still, you have definitely piqued my interest here on Malifaux. Are there any big final thoughts you want to talk about for this tactical Mizzenese goodness before we sign out?
Not really. I'm excited for a new topic we can discuss in tabletop gaming, especially if I manage to fully reel you into the honeypot.
Whatever you say, Twisted Fate, whatever you say. I think you've piqued my interest enough. If we can just get us both some of the starter crews and just like have patience as I learn a whole new style of gaming, I could be very interested in this.
Yeah, don't worry, I'll sort that out, because I'm the kind of person with this sort of thing who wants to collect everything.
Yeah, you are.
Or at least a base level of everything, because I would, as much as I would love to play the higher level of the game, I think it would just be super sweet to sit down with people with just the core boxes and just play those out. They're not all balanced in both points and in like power levels, but I feel like it showcases a good way of how to play the game.
Oh, no, yeah. If you have, like, a battle box with, like, everyone's starter guide so that you can explain it and get people's interest, and then for tryhards like me and whoever else we can, like, get into a local community to put, like, the high-level stuff, then we can definitely work on that. That's something we can definitely do.
Very much so. And there are tournaments out there, and there's a lot of really good YouTube channels for Malifaux, some that delve deep into the lore, which I highly recommend, and I need to pick up the RPG book for this game. As well as good battle reports, one of which is Miniature Battle Cinematica, who do battle reports in the style of stop motion, which is awesome.
Which seems like such an obvious idea to me, but it's not actually such a hugely done thing in the tactical minis game genre.
Not at all, and this person has under 1,000 subscribers, but is so, so good at what they do.
Yeah, I feel like because most other tactical minis games, like, there's so many units to, like, one person's army, it'd be next to impossible to do a stop motion with justice. But in a smaller cruise game like this, you can definitely do it. And listeners, you'll find Miniature Battle Cinematica linked in the show notes to this episode. Do check them out if you want to see this game in action, which is, I think, as good a start to learning about Malifaux as hearing our dulcet tones talked about it. But yeah, I think we've given ourselves a lovely introduction of some of the deep lore, some of the rigors of how it plays, and enough to sort of think about as we take our first delve. So thank you, my good pal Connor, for introducing me to yet another thing that I'm going to be gaining my hours away on. Very appreciated.
No worries. I love to bring you in on these wild adventures of mine.
You do indeed, and we love you for it. But until next time, where can our intrepid listeners find you, your writings, scratchings, and musings out on the internet?
You can find me over at the artist formerly known as Twitter, Akariu. I very rarely post, but every now and then I like to share our musings here at the Fantastic Universes and the Fantastic Plays. You can find my writings over at the Fantastic Universes, where I talk about Hosts, Flesh and Blood, Digimon, and other card games, and probably at some point, Malifaux.
Do check you will out.
Eventually...
Sorry about that, buddy. Go ahead.
Apologies. You will eventually find us over at YouTube, but we'll wait until we get something sorted for that, as technical problems keep getting in our way.
Good ideas can't be held back. They just need a little bit of help to just get started. But do check all that out, dear listeners. You will love it all if you love games like we do. But as for little old me, you can find me right here on Fantastic Universes, either here on the Fantastic Players podcast, cameoing on episode 3 of the upcoming Detective Comics podcast. But as to read my writing, look no further than fantasticuniverses.com, where I put my 2 cents on everything in the world of gaming, be it PC, console, tabletop, or everything in between. For DC Comics news, look to Dark Knight News, where I post many reviews across the weeks. Both Catwoman and Red Hood are in excellent spots right now. Follow me on the artist formerly known as Swizzer at Is It Tinkerer and Within the Darks of the Mirror. And you can check out a very special gaming project coming very soon, but I dare not speak about it because the producer will eat my soul. But that has been us talking about Malifaux here on the Fantastic Plays podcast. Thank you for listening. And until next time, live free and play well.